Coming up in this podcast, government contractor failures, house prices, population growth, LNG revival, Austal. Who are the performance share winners? And our special report on tourism.
Welcome to Mark My Words, the weekly podcast from Business News, with Mark Pownall and Mark Beyer discussing the important business news and data stories from Western Australia.
Welcome to our weekly podcast, and welcome Mark Beyer. Mark, there's been another contractor working on state government projects that's gone under. All Earth Group joins York Civil and VCS in external administration. What do we know about this?
Well, bad news for people out there, all the subbies out there who are trying to make a living and think they're working for a contractor that's going to stick around for a long time. All Earth Group has been going for about 25 years, set up by Vince Tarsia, brought in Stephen Pollard a few years ago as his chief executive. So, you know, a long track record and working for state government. They had a big contract out at Forestfield as part of the new rail link out there. They also had a substantial contract with Landcorp for a big residential subdivision they're doing. So some of the subbies who call me were saying, well, gee, you would have thought you're dealing with someone who's safe and secure here. So it adds to this concern around the construction industry as well, not just the civil contractors, where security of payments, something the government is looking at. Everyone recognises we need something better than what we've got at the moment. But you know, I've spoken to people who are owed hundreds of thousands of dollars as a result of this. They don't know if they're going to get paid. It's a big concern. And stems, it would appear, from a fairly soft market, and a lot of people seem to be going in and bidding very aggressively for work.
Yeah, and that's, you know, this, it's what I keep hearing, that there's still this view that there's plenty of companies to go under because there's still a lot of these lot of contracts out there that have been won by bidding too low. And obviously that's a frustration in that construction sector, that things won't improve until everyone can bid at realistic levels. Anyway, that's a challenge. I do wonder, that conversation we had last week about the state government wanting national or international contractors to come in and do stuff, I guess that does provide some sort of security around that. Although, again, we saw issues with the hospital, I suppose. We saw subcontractors struggling there too. So, you know, I guess it doesn't matter in some ways who the contractors are. And there's a few others that have occurred in recent times.
Well, as I say, York Civil, they were working on the pedestrian bridge going over to the new stadium. They were based in Adelaide, but had done a lot of work here. And VCS Civil and Mining, that was the old Viento group, been through a few different iterations. You know, they had a big contract on the North Link road project. So, you know, that continuing pattern of contractors that had been around for quite a long time and had substantial contracts on big government projects should be safe and secure, but evidently are not.
Yeah,
so it's a risky market out there.
Yeah, okay. Well, I guess, you know, no government solved that one, have they? And it's been an issue for a few years. All right, well, best of luck to them. Now, house prices remain soft, according to the latest data.
So we had two bits of information out during the week, and always a lot of interest around this topic. So Moody's Analytics, they work with CoreLogic, and they do forecasts for residential markets around the country. Their latest numbers are actually a bit more pessimistic for Western Australia than they had been previously. They see residential property values in Perth continuing to weaken for both 2018 and 2019 before a very soft pickup in 2020. So no dramatic, not falling out of bed here, continued softness. But then within the market, their view is in line with what we've heard from a few other groups, including REWA, that those sort of more inner suburbs in Perth, the established suburbs, the ones sometimes called the aspirational suburbs, they're seeing them being a lot more solid, so expecting price gains in the sort of the inner established suburbs.
Yep.
The other bit of evidence that was interesting, there are several groups out there that track house values and property values. The Bureau of Statistics put out their latest numbers, and interestingly, they were not as weak as the data that others like CoreLogic had been putting out. So not a dramatic difference, but it just got to show, it shows, I think, that you need to look at different segments of the market and be very careful about the data that you get. But look, yeah, the overall pattern, a fairly soft market, possibly a pickup in a couple of years. And one of the big drivers here is the slow population growth in Western Australia.
Yeah, right. They're the latest stats out.
So we're still seeing people leaving in net terms. People are leaving Western Australia and moving interstate. It's still around 1,000 a month. So it's a complete reversal of what we saw back in the boom years.
So just to be clear there, we've got population growth, obviously due to international immigration.
And natural increase.
And all right, and the natural birth rate. Okay, and then, but we lose people to the East Coast when we talk about internal immigration or emigration.
That's right. So overall, we're growing at a bit under 1% a year, but that's below the long-term trend. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's clearly a factor in sort of the soft economy and particularly the residential property construction and property values and so on. It yeah. all feeds into that. And you know, everything should be here to actually retain people. There's a lot of good news on the projects front, a lot of mining work that people are talking about and other resources projects which we'll talk about in a moment. Housing here is very affordable compared to other states. But those numbers tell a picture.
Yeah.
A lot of people want to head off to the East Coast, to the bright lights and the big cities.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. And I guess, maybe some of them are people returning to where they came from because the opportunities are greater there. I guess often the broad public miss the trend until it's changed the other way, right? So maybe people are leaving just at the moment when they shouldn't be because they're still looking at historic information rather than the forecasts. But then again, house prices aren't looking good for 2 years, so maybe they're right. Now, Mark, we've noted, and speaking of, those things in the upside, we've noted the amount of activity in mining that has led to some confidence in the market. Now we're seeing some movement in LNG projects as well.
Yeah, so we, of course, had that decade where there was this amazing construction boom in the LNG sector. Gorgon and Wheatstone and Pluto and Ichthys and so on, multi-billions of dollars invested. And there was a general view that, we'd never see that again. And yet now a lot of preparatory work is underway to develop new gas fields, largely to feed the existing LNG plants.
Okay, so the same as the mining sort of return as well,
but
right?
But there is talk that there could be some expansion of LNG processing capacity here as well.
Okay.
So Woodside is looking at their Pluto plant. But even if we don't get another LNG plant, simply the development of more offshore fields will provide a very significant boost. And what's doubly interesting is the fact that the big players, particularly Chevron and Woodside, are talking more seriously about sharing infrastructure. So we've had this historical pattern, both in WA and Queensland, where people build LNG plants and pipelines and everything, almost literally in parallel. And it doesn't make sense long term.
Yeah.
So we may have a scenario, and Nigel Hearn from Chevron was talking about this, that Woodside is planning to build a new pipeline to feed their planned Scarborough development. Chevron could tap into that. They've got a couple of big gas fields, Clio and Acme, they're called. They could actually tap into the Woodside pipeline, take the gas to the North West Shelf plant. Similarly, there's the Browse gas fields, which have been talked about for years. There's sort of about six different groups that own it.
Yep.
They all need to sort of get aligned in their thinking, build a pipeline down to the North West Shelf. They could go into either the Pluto gas plant or the Karratha gas plant. So lots of encouraging discussions underway, and also on the back of some encouraging market trends, strong demand for clean gas as a fuel source up in Asia.
Yeah, right.
So looking good for some pretty serious investment in that space.
And just, is that kind of investment equal the same kind of jobs as we, because if you're not actually building LNG plants or even expanding them, is there's the same level of job, because I know it's expensive to build, to put pipelines mm-hmm. underneath the sea, but it doesn't require a lot of people, I presume.
Yeah, look, compared to a mining project, the kicker in terms of jobs is substantially less.
Yeah.
And equally the local content, because there's lots of complex equipment that's highly engineered. It's often cheaper or easier or simply not possible to make it here.
Yeah.
Whereas a big mining project, it's largely a civil kind of development.
Yep.
And you get a very large amount of local content.
Yeah, okay.
Nonetheless, very significant opportunities.
Yep, no, got it. Now, Mark, Perth-based shipbuilder Austal continues to have success in naval contracts, albeit in the US and not here.
Yeah, look, it was interesting during the week. They put out an announcement that the US Navy has awarded them a contract worth $1.6 billion to build two new ships for the US Navy. Now, these, of course, get built at their shipyard in Alabama,
yep,
in the US. But it's interesting that a company like Austal, with their track record of building highly sophisticated vessels for the US Navy, can't win the same kind of work in Australia.
Mm, they're in the wrong state, I think, Mark.
That would appear to be the case. Earlier this year, there were two big announcements from the federal government for naval shipbuilding, and Austal was keen to be involved in both or either and could not get a look in.
Mm.
And much to the frustration of the people at Austal, led by their chairman, John Rothwell. Now, what I found particularly ironic is that after Austal won the US contract, the Australian minister, Christopher Pyne, put out an announcement congratulating them, saying this was another example of Australia's successful defence industry.
Mm.
I thought, well, gee, what a shame that they couldn't actually tap into that expertise and skill for Australia's own naval needs.
No, it's remarkable, remarkable. And there's plenty of irony in it, and I guess it's really an example of a West Australian company doing it in any case. And anyway, very successful company, and we've followed them for a long time, you and I, so well done. Because that was a huge and ambitious move to go and set up in the US to win that kind of work. Now, Mark, I think this is a really outstanding bit of work you've done around performance shares. Now, that most performance shares vest around about now, or I guess we get to see the announcements of that over this sort of period. Now, you've done an analysis and found the top 20 in WA. Tell us a bit about those.
Yeah, look, very interesting. So I've teamed up with Matt McKenzie to do some research on this. Now, this is all part of the debate around executive remuneration. So, and whenever somebody, a new executive is appointed, everyone looks at their base pay. Then on top of that, they get their annual bonuses. Then on top of that, there's a bunch of either performance shares or share options or share incentives of some kind.
Mm.
And when they're awarded in the first place, you're never quite sure how valuable they're going to be, because they're all tied to company performance and changing market conditions. Now, what we do, and our regular readers would know this, that every edition of Business News, there's a table showing changes in directors' share interests, plus all the data is on our website under the BNIQ tab. But we've pulled out a few highlights because, as you say, this is the time of year when the performance shares vest. And we've got about 20 WA executives, and collectively they've all acquired about $38 million worth of shares at zero cost.
Mm.
This is the key thing here, because their respective companies hit, whether it's an earnings target or a balance sheet target, or even in some cases like Jupiter Mines, simply completing a listing on the ASX, they hit their target. Therefore, their performance shares vest, and then the board says, here you go, here's a few million dollars worth of shares.
Yep.
So some of the names at the top of the list, Ian Testrow at Emeco, Graham Kerr at South32, David McGeorge at SRG, John Wellborn at Resolute, and there's a lot more there. So all the details are in our next edition of Business News or on our website. But it's fascinating to look at the detail, and you can then, I guess, step back and say, well, you know, most of these companies have done well.
Yep.
They have hit performance targets, but there's this perennial debate about, how much should these people be rewarded for doing their job?
Yeah.
Or doing it quite well.
It is a perennial debate, isn't it?
Yeah. And we pulled up a particularly interesting example. Now, it's got a loose WA connection, but there's a tech company called iSignThis. They did a backdoor listing a few years ago through a former Perth company called Otis Energy. So there's probably still a few Perth shareholders with a stake in this company. Now, you know, it's a tech company. It's got a fairly modest market value. But their chief executive, Nicholas Karantzis, has acquired shares worth $26 million.
Yeah, right.
At no cost, because his company has achieved performance targets.
Yep.
So that leads, of course, to very significant dilution for all the other shareholders in there. Now, they might be happy. They think the company's done well, but gee whiz, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's a hard one, isn't it? I mean, we all know, right? When something's not worth much, we all think, well, if I can see it's so easy to sign a contract or do a deal where, well, what's the downside for me? If it grows by 100% and I give away 20 or 25% of that to somebody, who cares? Always a bit different when you actually get there. And, you know, suddenly that 100% is real money and and you resent someone getting it when you feel that, well, I've paid them or whatever. So, you know, we all know the psychology of this. I don't think there's any answers, and I guess it's up to the CEOs or executives in question to justify, you know. I mean, it's a contract, so they're going to get them. All they've got to do is be satisfied that they did what they did, and I guess the next test is would someone else hire them to do it again on the same basis? Now, Mark, this week's special report is on tourism. How are we selling WA to the world or not?
Well, in recent years, we've not been doing a particularly good job, and the numbers are quite stark in that regard, as we've talked about previously. But Peter Commode has had a good look at this area. He's had a long talk to both the Minister, Paul Papalia, and his shadow, Libby Metam from the Liberals, who I make the observation, there's not many people in the Liberal opposition at the moment, but she's one that really knows her stuff and provides lots of interesting insights. Now, Paul Papalia sort of started off by making a very interesting observation. There's an event called the Australian Tourism Exchange. It's the big annual gathering of all the people from the industry and a lot of people from international. Now, this event was last held in Perth in 2012, and in a sense, it was the worst possible time to host it here.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't get a hotel room. Everything was extraordinarily expensive. So everybody in the tourism industry went away thinking, goodness me, Perth's hard work.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think that we've still got that reputation. Yeah. We're battling to change that. Now, the Australian Tourism Exchange is coming back to Perth next year.
Right.
So that's our chance to reinforce that things have changed. You can get, there are lots of hotels out there now,
that's true.
More coming, as we'll discuss. The cost of them has come down, lots of investment in infrastructure. And of course, you know, this weekend it's the AFL finals, Optus Stadium will be full, lots of interstate visitors coming here and bringing their money with them. The state government has...
Well, not so many, I think. Isn't that the speculation on that one? Anyway, go on, sorry.
No, fair enough. Okay. There's the AFL finals, but lots of other events like the Rugby League, State of Origin, Chelsea Football Club, all sorts of things, some big concerts and so on. And there's a general view that the stadium is a great asset, along with other infrastructure that's been developed around the state.
Yeah.
But a lot more work needs to be done. Building direct air links up into key markets, up in China and Japan and India and so on, boosting our marketing, getting more events to fill these venues.
Yep.
So the government's talking the talk at the moment. They recognise what needs to be done, and they've committed substantial money to this. But there's a lot of work ahead to actually get runs on the board.
And allowing some of these things to go ahead that people are trying to do, you know, they seem to be all controversial, but you've got the chairlift idea, you've got the hot springs idea, you've got the inland surfing complex idea, all of which have either had a hard time or going nowhere, you know, and those are things that I think tourism needs. I guess we're not going to get them up in a year in most cases, but still, you know, I think that's something that I struggle with. Anyway.
And well, the one thing that is happening, hotels.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had once again, some more research, some more numbers here, which we love doing. Over the last few years, there's about 3,000 hotel rooms that have been added to the stock in Perth.
Yeah.
And there's a similar number on the way.
Yeah, right.
So there's 8 hotels currently under construction, another 9 that are either, you know, committed or approved, likely to go ahead. So it'll be interesting to see how many of those 9 actually do get developed in this market.
Yeah, and you've got Airbnb out there as well at the same time.
Absolutely.
Crikey.
Yeah, so some very encouraging signs for tourism.
Yes.
Let's hope we can turn the opportunity into something real.
Absolutely. All right. Well, great, Mark. Thanks for that. Our next success and leadership guest is Julie Bishop. She served as the member of Curtin in the House of Representatives since 1998, was Australia's first female foreign minister, and was a contender for the prime ministership last month. She'll be on stage on Friday, October 12. Tickets are selling very fast, so go to our website or give us a call to grab yours. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Mark My Words with Mark Pownall and Mark Beyer from Business News. For more information, please go to businessnews.com.au/podcasts. And to receive these regularly, search for Business News WA in iTunes or SoundCloud.